Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Woogity woogity Brooklyn boys about to get a hit stick. My waist bones connected to my hip bone. My hip bones connected to
hardy,
my
hard, hard, thigh hard.
Bone. My thigh bones connected to my knee bone. My knee bones connected to my hardy, hard, hard, hard. The Jibbity Jabber, Georgia Jabber. That's
the
bunny bone. Skip the
good.
Whole routine. I'd rather have my
Marco's
money.
Killing it today. It's time to talk some Chiefs with Jesse Newell, who is live in studio right now. What's up, Jesse? How are you, man?
How's it going, Nate?
You know, We've been griping like old men, cursing at clouds over the last few days. Do you feel that baseball is in trouble? What are your thoughts on the state of the game?
Although
right now,
you cover the Chiefs, baseball as well. You've been to some baseball games this week, right?
I covered three of them last 6 days or so. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm sort of in the middle here, right? Yeah. I'm not the young generation where it seems to sort of get lost, because now in social media world, you're not watching it live. You can see the highlights later if you want to, and that's if you want to. Sort of struggles to keep attention because the games are so long, and obviously they've got the pitch clock coming, so that potentially will help and get things moved along. But I'm also not the old guard where it still wasn't ingrained to me, though. I think that's what's different, is that I grew up and, you know, I watched every Royals game I could watch. I remember I grew up in Emporia, so they would have the mini schedule, the pocket schedule, you guys know.
Yep.
You would fold them out, and they would have, like, the best days were the ones with the little gold outlines on them. That was, like, the West Coast days, you know, where they go to the West Coast, and those would be on TV.
Television.
So, I mean, I was up, you know, at 9, 10 years old, I was up at night, I was watching the Royals, and
Very rarely was a home game on TV.
Exactly. Yeah. And in those road games, again, you would get like 8 or 9 in a row, or 7 out of 8, because it was so late. And it was just like Christmas because you could watch the Royals. But I mean, not that Denny Matthews and Fred White were bad consolation. Obviously grew up with that as well, but on the radio. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I think there's challenges. I think, unfortunately, for what it appears, they probably have the worst commissioner of the main ones out there.
He's just brutal.
He's terrible. I mean, I don't know how else to really say it, but it just seems like other leagues confront their challenges and problems in a much different way than Major League Baseball does. So, I think there's trouble. I think the games are too long. I think they need to be snappier. And I hate to even say this because I feel like a traditionalist in the sense I just told you my history with baseball, but there were some times when they played those 7-inning doubleheaders with the COVID year, and I thought, I kind of like
it a little bit.
Like,
yeah, I was
sometimes you're done in an hour 50 and you didn't really change the makeup of the game that much, and there's not a zillion more pitching changes. And again, I understand traditionalists out there would say, hey, that's not good. That's not good for the game. But maybe sometimes stuff like that needs to happen to make it a little bit more available.
We spent some time complaining yesterday with Mike Boddicker, which is about every week complaining about this.
Okay.
And Tom Glavine, he was on as well, because he's going to be at the American Century Championship out in Lake Tahoe next week. And Glavine was talking about that the game is, he doesn't blame players. The game is managed away, and players will play the way the game is managed to, right? So he gets that part. And so what we saw yesterday at the K was the way I think we all kind of remember games being played. 2-1, took 2 hours and 18 minutes. Zach Greinke didn't go out and try to strike everyone out. Pitched to contact, got guys to hit bad pop-ups, stuff like that. I mean, and it wasn't super crisp. There were some bungles and stuff like that out there, but it was like, it wasn't all just strikeouts and crap like that. It was like a regular kind of old baseball game. So it was nice to see that yesterday. And maybe it was getaway day and some guys were just hacking. I don't think they really do that, honestly.
We say contract year is undefeated. Getaway day is undefeated.
I've seen some getaway days that take a while, too, because in order to have a contract year, you can't give up an at-bat, right? Because every at-bat counts in that way. But, you know, someone like Zach Greinke, I think, you know, that's why he's still pitching right now, because he figured out a way to continue to do this at the major league level, because he can throw a pitch in a spot where a guy, it's not, it's maybe 8 miles an hour slower than it used to be, but he knows how to get people out still.
Here's the problem, and this is kind of what I'm talking about with the commissioner, okay? And here I'm going to pull out my analytics book that Nate Buchady says I pull out every single week.
It's his analytics, it's Jesse's analytics.
It's going to be available for publish here, the 700 pages at some point. The incentives are misaligned here, because the best teams, the best pitchers in Major League Baseball, what do? They strike everybody out. Because, you know, Joe Pyszczanski wrote a piece on this 20 years ago. I remember kind of really opened my eyes, because you always hear pitch to contact, pitch to contact, pitch to contact. Well, the best way to win baseball games is to not pitch to contact, guys. It's to strike everybody out, because if you strike somebody out, you get them out 99.8% of the time, 99.9% of the time. So it's misaligned in that if you are a pitcher, you have great incentive to strike somebody out. That is how you get big contracts, win games. And if you're a hitter, the incentive is to hit the ball over the fence. And sometimes you strike out, and that's okay. It's okay if you hit the ball over the fence. So on a big macro level, you're playing this game, but teams are following what you need to do to succeed, to win the game, as Herm Edwards would say. They're playing to win the game. And so what Rob Manfred needs to do, or baseball needs to do, is they need to find a way to get it so that the incentives align with, hey, you should want to get guys that can steal bases. You should want to get guys that, you know, have action plays, or that speed up the game with where the pitch clocks, or moving the mound back so that these guys aren't all throwing 110 miles an hour or 102 miles an hour from 60 feet, 6 inches. But that's the problem. You need some proactiveness to get in front of that. And right now those are misaligned. And that's a lot of the cause, I think, of the problems that we're talking about here, is that because hitters don't care as much about strikeouts and only care about hitting home runs, and because pitchers care about strikeouts and not pitching contact, because they should. That's what gets them contracts. That's what win games. Nothing's really back to push against that. You're left with this kind of awkward.
They don't line up, right?
Exactly.
Whit Merrifield's been talking about. It's like we want all these things, and Whit's like, well, let's reward the guys who put the ball in play and steal bases and do these things.
Exactly.
And you know, I mean, listen, Whit's not going poor here, okay? But he was a really nice baseball player and got a nice contract, but. And I'm paying him $30 million go do that. And even the Yankees aren't going to pay someone $30 million to come in and do what Whit Merrifield does. So they need to line all these things up. But the problem is they got a bad commissioner. They have an ownership thing at lots of different markets that get different amounts of money they can do different things with. And they're fighting against a union. And the union fights amongst itself, because it seems like to me, generically speaking, the union has done more for the top than it has done for the bottom part of the union. In my opinion, they're working on that, trying to raise the minimum salaries and all those things. So you got about seven things pulling against each other, and that's where the commissioner has to come in and try to get everyone rowing the boat the same direction. And I don't think that's happening.
Well, and then one of the things that Glavin said, he talked about analytics. He said, I think there's a place, and this is a common refrain. There's a place in the game for analytics, but they've gone too far. Everything's too over-reliant on analytics. I think that part of the issue, and I like to give Jesse a hard time about analytics.
He just pulled the book out again. He put it away and he pulled it back out.
Yeah, here it comes.
We all have our different ways of processing things and what we like. I could tell you why I fell in love with baseball when I was a kid, and you mentioned Denny Matthews and Fred White. I wanted to become a play-by-play announcer because when I was in fifth and sixth grade, I was going through a major transition period in my life where I had moved from the city to a small town in southern Kansas. I was feeling a lot of I'd gone through a lot. Mm-hmm. And I had a difficult time sleeping at night. That's my sleep problems started at that point in my life, and I would have nightmares and things. I would sneak my radio under my pillow because my parents thought it was bad for me to listen to something when I was going to bed at night because it would keep me up, but it was actually what allowed me to fall asleep. I would fall asleep listening to Denny and Fred tell me stories about my favorite heroes. You know, these characters that were doing cool things, and they would weave these yarns and tell these stories. And I loved those guys. And I wanted to be the kind of person someday that could tell the story of great athletes, because I, Lord knows, I wasn't going to be one of those great athletes. And so, like, that's my love of the game. My love of the game is the personal stories and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. Some people, their love of the game is the numbers of it, is looking at the box score every day and seeing who's doing what. And I get that. But I think that we almost, like, when I push back against analytics, it's not analytics themselves, to me, that are the problem, because every team's job is to find whatever way they can to win games. That goes to what you were saying, Jesse. The problem is the best way to win games is a terrible way to watch baseball.
Yeah.
And so it's not the Houston Astros' job. I'll use this example. I tanked 1 year in fantasy football in my league because my three best players got hurt. I was 0-5, and I was like, well, the team that finishes in last place gets the first pick next year. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for me to try to win. There's no incentive for me to win whatsoever, so I tanked. And everybody in the league was mad at me, and they changed the rule. So now the team that finishes with the best record in out of playoff contention gets the first pick. You still have a reason to try to, like, right. We came up with a reason to still try to win. What is Major League Baseball's solution? We're going to do a lottery. Oh, that's going to stop teams from tanking. It's not the Houston Astros' fault. They found the best way for them to put together a winning team. It's the league's fault for incentivizing it. It's the league's fault for incentivizing losing. It's the league's fault if they don't come up with... You got to give the teams reasons to want to have starting pitchers go deep. You got to come up with reasons to make it to where putting the ball in play is valued and important, because each team's job is to go out there and find how to win, right? Isn't that basically what we're talking about here, Jesse?
No, that's exactly it. I mean, that's where you need somebody up in charge to say, how can we move the dials to make it a better product for the fans, for what people want to watch, like you said, for in play. And again, the Royals in 2015, when they won the World Series, they were an outlier. I mean, nobody's won that way since. Mm-hmm. The contact, the speed aspect of it, the defense, all that sort of stuff. I mean, they really it's an outlier because it's an outlier. I mean, that's not how teams win anymore. They hit the ball over that fence over there. And I mean, it's amazing, you know, for all that we talk about, okay, you know, runner on third, less than two outs, how many times you get that guy in, or making the small play or the bait, whatever. I mean, how many times do you just win a game because a dude hits the ball over the fence? I mean, that is the most – if we're looking at this, if, like, we were to rewrite baseball, like, home runs are kind of out of whack. I mean, one swing can get you three or four runs. I mean, that's kind of out of whack if we just looked at this. So that's why it's valued so much. That's analytics right there. It's like, huh, that thing that you do when you hit it over the fence, that's really valuable, yeah. And, you know? And so we're gonna try to do that. Let's do that a lot. Let's go win baseball games, because that's whatever – I mean, that's where I think –
And when you try to do that, you strike out sometimes because you're swinging hard.
Swinging really hard. Yeah. So, and that's where I appreciate this conversation, because, like, the straw man argument is sometimes like, well, it's just analytics. You know, analytics is ruining the game. No, analytics is trying to win the game. It's trying to figure out the game, and right. It's figured out that home runs are so freaking valuable that you got to sell out for them.
Like, what happened in football is people figured out that the way to win games was to throw the ball and stuff, mm-hmm. And that was more exciting.
More entertaining,
so
yeah.
It just went the other way in the game itself is what it did.
Yeah, but the league, basketball and football both, have gone to painstaking attempts and against serious pushback by the old guard in both of those sports to make their sports more entertaining.
Well, basketball, I think, is having some troubles now, because there are plenty of people, because now the quote-unquote analytics, you know, what's the guy who wrote the book, Sprawl Ball, where you just, you know, you're shooting threes, because it's worth 3 points if you make, percentage-wise, mm-hmm. This isn't super hard math, you shoot enough of these and enough of them go in, it's better than shooting an 18-foot shot. Well, the guys are getting better at it, but they're not as good as they should be, so there were many people to tell you that the NBA game isn't as fun to watch as it was a few years ago. I don't know where I fall on that or not, but it can be dangerous, because if they end up doing that too much and it turns into a home run, and, like, you're striking out if you go 2 for 12 from shooting threes, but you still find a way to win the game because it's enough. It may not work that way. I don't know.
But in the 90s, you know, and look, Jordan carried everything in the NBA for a while, but then it was brawl ball. Mm-hmm. It was the New York Knicks just fouling the crap out of everybody.
Hand-checking.
You know, hand-checking.
Yep. Well, but and now, like you're about to say.
Freedom of movement.
Freedom of movement.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Make sure that you can move. Exactly.
Yeah. In the NFL,
illegal contact. Pass interference.
Oh, man.
It's harder to make rules in baseball that'll work this way.
But also, what was going to ruin the NFL? What was going to ruin football? Concussions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the games, we all these, you know, kids weren't participating in football anymore and everything. So the league goes out. And to this day, you'll still hear guys going, well, that was a clean hit. That was the right hit. And they get punished for it. What was the defender supposed to do? You know, the guy ducked. It's impossible to play defense in the NFL. And everybody gripes about it. But you know what everybody does? They watch the games. And all of a sudden, now the game's never going to be 100% safe. But players' careers are lasting longer. You get to watch the great players play more often. And against major pushback, they changed all these rules to make the game more entertaining. And it doesn't seem like baseball has gotten there yet. And I don't know how easy it is to do, Jesse, but to me it's like...
It's fighting with the union sometimes on some of these things. And that's not easy. I don't know what the right
then
things are.
Well, work with the union. I mean, like, that's part of the deal, too. Is like, to me, Manfred, one of the worst things about him is he is just completely antagonistic.
Well, that's his problem. And leadership is there's always been an inherent mistrust with the players and any commissioner. I mean, listen, Roger Goodell is hated, okay, because he's just a mouthpiece for the owners, whatever, because any commissioner is a mouthpiece for the owners. But I think in some leagues, like, it's worked better in the NBA because I think they feel more that Adam Silver is an advocate for the game, and it's worked better with the players. And that's where leadership is a possibility. But who hires?
Right.
Who hires the commissioner? Not the players. The owners do. So they – I'll give the NBA ownership credit. They have hired a better commissioner.
Yeah.
And he's been more of a partner to the league.
You can hire a guy that's going to force everybody to go along with what you want to do. But I look at it like this. If I can get my kids to want to help me clean the kitchen, they're going to do such a better job than if I scream and yell at them and force them to clean the kitchen. Well, I don't always pull it off, you know, but it is one of those things. Like, if you can make them feel like it's their idea, and that they're a part, you know, that they play a role in it, you know, that they have some stake in it, you actually get like better cooperation and better results. And they just don't do that in baseball. And I don't know. I mean, I think, like, you just look at these other two sports, and haven't they both figured out how to make their sport? They've taken steps to make their sport more entertaining to watch.
They get in front of it. They look ahead. Now, the only thing I will say is, if people want to Google Theo Epstein, he's the one right now with baseball that is looking all this stuff, and basically, and he's the kind of guy that, I mean, sort of you wish was commissioner. You know what I mean? A guy that has. He understands the side of it because he was the GM for the Red Sox and got all this analytics stuff. He understood it. He took advantage of it, and so he understands the incentives at play. But, you know, looking at some of the things he wants to do, again, the pitch clock could help. The one thing they tried to do, they tried to limit these pitchers, and I know there's been some blowback on that. But
I went to the College World Series last week. In the pitch clock, there's always a way around it. They just step off and act like they're going to throw to second. You need whatever rule, people will try to find a way around it. But I liked it because it's out there. It's 20 seconds. It starts. And I like it. But they'll find a way to fight the pitch clock. They just will. That's human nature.
It's working in the minor leagues. I mean, shortening games up, the guys are doing it.
The players like it.
Yeah,
I mean, from the people
like
that they've talked to. And like I said, it was sort of like the 7-inning thing with COVID.
It didn't bother me.
It was sort of like, hey, I can go do something the rest of my day. I feel like it's a nice 2-hour window here, and you move on and you do it. And I even going to sporting, I feel like, oh, 7:30 game, that seems kind of late. Oh, well, it's going to be 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
You just know. And so, I think the baseball definitely needs to have as much foresight as it can to look down the road. And again, a guy like Theo Epstein, I think, really can help to get these rules into place and try to push us in the right direction.
This has been a fantastic Chiefs segment with Jesse Newell.
Well, I want to talk next, not about the Chiefs if you can. I'll give you a little teaser. Leadership, right? The Big 12 has just hired a new leader.
Ooh.
You covered the Big 12 for a long time. I'm going to talk to you about this new Brett Yormark guy because he's coming from outside
Rock
the world.
Rock Nation, baby.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the Chiefs.
I also want, because the ESPN did put out their organizational rankings in terms of who's got the most talent. Chiefs are, I'm not going to say where, but they're top 10. We'll see if Jesse agrees with that as well. That's all straight ahead on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Mr. Dovalina, Mr. Bob Dovalina. Mr. Dovalina, Mr. Bob Dovalina. Mr. Dovalina, Mr. Bob Dovalina.
I get the sense that this is Nomdy calling the shots on all these songs to try to prove he does know old school hip hop after the whole embarrassment with
no, these are
public
my decisions.
Okay. I like it, Marco. All right, so...
Rock Nation hip-hop. I do want to talk about this with Jesse Newell before we talk some Chiefs. because this is the 1 week where there's no cheap stuff. We're getting close to camp. So, Jesse, you worked in our area. You've been a star for a while, and you were out in Lawrence for a long time. You covered the Jayhawks and everything out there, and you've been through conference Armageddons and things like that.
Yeah.
So, and we have more of that stuff coming here, right? Oklahoma and Texas are leaving sometime, TBD, and we've got four new teams coming in. And the Big 12 has made a hire at commissioner. This is a turn-it-on-your-head hire compared to Bob Bowlesby, former athletic director, coach, commissioner guy, to I work for Rock Nation. Mm-hmm. I know this Brett Yormark has sports history, some. More venue stuff with the Brooklyn Nets and, you know, some things with NASCAR. First impressions of this hire outside the box for this league where they are right now.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I would be lying to you if I researched it a whole bunch, because obviously it's not not the main beat that I work with anymore. But I think, to me, it screams NIL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where this thing is going and how creative you have to be and how important it is for the Big 12 to stay up with the big dogs and to have a voice that understands that and gets that. And, you know, you've seen this a lot. This has happened with AD searches too, because that's what's kind of fascinating is you'll start an AD, you know, kind of behind the scenes, but when an athletic program fires an AD, you start a list. Okay, here's this old athletic director, this one. And all of a sudden, you'll always get somebody calling you and saying, hey, look, they might be looking at this CEO. They might be looking at this guy who's a lawyer.
Right.
Around town, you know, they might be looking at, and you get all these other names that you sort of like, hey, that doesn't make sense on its face. But then you think about it and they're like, what makes a good leader? You know, what makes somebody who would be good in a role that is at the top of the food chain? And you see how some of that stuff translates over, you know, like, hey, this person understands what it takes to be in charge. They understand to think on their feet and collaboration and times of crisis, what you do. So, I think we're seeing a lot more of those hires, and you see a lot more of kind of the consulting firms that are out there for these people saying, hey, you need to consider some of these people if they're interested in it. But to me, again, I think it speaks to, for the Big 12, obviously one of the biggest things that is going to be on the top of their minds coming forward is not only maintaining relevance in today's college football world, especially with losing Oklahoma and Texas, but also the NIL part of this and trying to be out in front of that and be a place that really markets that and makes sure that that's a huge thing.
I have no doubt that Brett Yormark has dealt with crisis and things like that in his previous jobs. I just think his eyeballs will be open so big the first time he sits in a meeting with the CEOs of these colleges and where they're coming from, because they're a different breed from anything he's ever dealt with. When you're talking about chancellors and presidents of universities, they're just different, man. And he'll have some nights where he'll go, what is going on? Who is this person? I don't care about the paper you wrote about something or other. This is a different thing now. And that'll be the charge for all of these universities to step on board with this stuff. And there'll be resistance. I don't know. It's good. It's an unusual job. It's a different job than it's ever been.
Can we go ahead and say that this job is just the latest reminder that we're talking about professional sports now?
Pretty much.
This is not amateur sports. This is it hasn't been for a long time. It's funny, I went to the KAB thing yesterday, and Wyatt Thompson and Brian Haney got up, and they were speaking to the aspiring broadcasters and answering questions, and they got a lot of questions about NIL and where things are headed with college athletics. And it's a scary world. It's a complicated world. Any administrator you talk to right now will tell you, if you are an assistant AD somewhere at a university right now, 99% of your time is being spent on NIL mm-hmm. and trying to figure out the landscape and all that stuff. And I feel, I guess, for the administrators in that regard. But I sat there and I thought to myself, I freaking love this, because all that college athletics has been about to this point has been, how do we make more money for the athletics department and all the old people working in it? And now it's, how do we get more money for the kids that are playing? And
Keep some for themselves.
And keep some for them.
That's
well,
the battle.
100%. But like, this is why we got here, is because this whole thing about amateurism and a nonprofit college athletics model has been a farce for so long when you're selling your TV rights deal for $1 billion and you can't have anything other than the NCAA approved Coca-Cola bottle up on the stand when you're addressing things as a coach.
Please decant your drink when you go to the press table.
You know, you have to, you know, everything's about sponsorship and money, and the whole reason that the Conference Armageddon stuff has happened is because of multi-million dollar TV rights deals and all that stuff. It's been pro for a while. Right, like from that standpoint, the decision, when I say pro, I mean the decisions that have been made in college athletics for decades now have been based on money, not on the best. You know, they've had to try to do things to show that we still care about the student athlete and all that stuff. But when you make this hire, this is not an academic. This is not a guy who has made his career out of...
Two of the Power Five commissioners now are the MGM guy and the Rock Nation guy.
Why do they like the Rock Nation guy? Because they think he's going to help them make a ton of money for the league and negotiate rights deals and help NIL make a ton of money. That's what this is about, right? This isn't about which one's going to get the best student-athlete experience for the kids when it comes to their amateurism, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I think twofold too. You know, we kind of circles back to the Manfred conversation, to look ahead rather than look around you. You know, I remember BB back in 2010. It just felt like everyone was looking around like, oh, did you know this could happen? Did you see this coming? And even, I mean, there was part of it with the Oklahoma Texas thing too. We're like, did anybody know this was possible?
I think Bob Bowlesby's done a great job, but his biggest failure was not knowing this was happening.
That's exactly it.
Now, that's the clandestine sneakiness that Oklahoma and Texas were all about. And somehow they were in with some sneaky people with the SEC, and they were sneaky about it. And just like one person found out, and then it got out. So I'll blame Bowlesby for that a little bit, but you also have to blame the liars, and that's Oklahoma and Texas.
Well, and you know, I always think about the Bill Snyder term where he came back. Settled the waters. I mean, Bowlesby settled the waters. That's when he came in, that was chaos because of the BB thing. Like, oh, my gosh, what's going on here?
And Chuck Ninus,
definitely, definitely settled the waters after that point. But, Nate, you might also be talking about a shift just in general, which what you're talking about, because now some of the people that are the most valuable to the athletic departments, and whether it's in the athletic department or outside of it, is the NIL stuff. And a lot of those people are tending to be younger. Mm-hmm. A lot of those people are tending to be, hey, do you have a familiarity with social media and Instagram, how to get things go that way? Do you know how to make a social media post? Do you have Photoshop skills? And so this is different from, again, sort of what we grew up with, which was, you would go to these college athletics events, and there's a bunch of old men in suits, and they make up the schedules, and they were valuable to the organizations that way, and they had nice cars and nice houses. And now it's kind of flipped on its head a little bit, where the people that are sort of valued and needed, whether it's the recruiting or NIL, or some of these younger people who have a different skill set and have a different view of the world.
So understand the landscape. They understand the landscape.
I think a lot of the people who have been in athletic departments for the last 50 years or whatever, and especially the last 10, 12 years, if they don't think this should be happening, they won't fight fully for it.
Yep.
Well, they're out.
Yep.
They're out.
And they're going to be
sit
gone.
Sit around and gripe about it, or you can lean into it and
well,
go,
then
okay,
you're going to see
this
coaches
is an opportunity.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, a lot of these coaches are going to retire. I mean, I don't think Roy Williams retired because of NIL. He coached long enough or whatever.
I don't think he didn't retire because of
right.
NIL. You
so,
know what I mean?
Because you can keep doing
keep
this.
In the game, that's for sure.
I mean, you could just keep doing this. And after a while, you're like, I don't even want to jack with this. And I don't know what Roy Williams really thinks about it, but I think in the end he was an old school enough guy to think that a college education is worth something, being a Jayhawk or a Tar Heel is worth something, and all those kind of things. So yeah, I mean, after a while, and these coaches have made enough money where they don't have to work, so they'll be like, I don't think so. I don't really want to be a part of this, even if they don't believe in it or whatever. But I think where the rubber meets the road in the athletic departments, that's where especially you have to have someone who thinks it's the right thing, not just because it's the rules today, mm-hmm. to help do it. And the people who were the fast movers at the beginning of it are already a step ahead. And that's why the Big 12 needs to, as an organization, try to be a step ahead. And we'll see. I mean, we haven't seen much from this guy yet. He got announced yesterday. I guess he'll be available at the Big 12 media days and all that stuff. And I'm assuming he's going to be very impressive. It'll be probably a big switch on what Bob Bowlesby was like at press conferences and things. But I don't know. You got to be on board, or otherwise you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
Working a job.
Yeah, it's I look at it like my My dad always laughs at me being a modern man because of how much I help around the house. You know, I fold laundry in my house. I help cook. I help clean the dishes. I help do all these things.
We call that a human being, yeah, and a partner.
That's
a modern man.
That's what I say. I'm like, well, it's called a partnership. Yeah. You know, like my wife has a career too. And but, you know, like it at one point in time in American history, the woman had to stay home and do things. And the marriage was based on, I've got to do exactly what, I mean, I'm dependent on the other person to provide the money.
It's a paradigm shift.
And I kind of have to do what they say when it comes to being around the house. And then the world changes. And you know what? My wife is not financially dependent on me. That's the truth. You know? And so, like, it's like there's a little bit of equal footing all of a sudden. And you can sit there and gripe about it if you're a cranky old man, or you can say, hey, this is the world, and you know what? It's kind of cool because she has a choice in this whole situation too, and it's not just about like what I can do for you. It's what we can do for each other, and there's going to be a lot of coaches that are griping about the fact that they actually have to continually convince their players that they want to stay there, and there's going to be other coaches that want to steal them away from you and offer them things, and there are going to be some guys that get lured into other stuff. You know what I mean? But it's like, whichever coaches decide to embrace the landscape, that will be the ones that are successful. And the ones that gripe about it and fight against it aren't going to be successful.
It's the home runs in baseball. I mean, Bill Self talked about how he didn't like it, and then he went out and got Remy Martin. Mm-hmm. And Remy Martin helped win him a national championship, right? I mean, like, it's just, I mean, get with the times. Get with it. And, again, that's what KU did. That's what Bill Self did. And, obviously, the top of the food chain is going to benefit a lot more than the bottom. We all know that. KU going out and poaching Texas Tech's best player. That's nice to do, be able to do that. But
you know, the Texas Tech fans get mad at you, too.
Oh.
They may show up somewhere. They're not going to be able to fill up Allen Fieldhouse like they did the old drum down in Austin.
Yeah.
But,
well.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, that's it. We'll take a break. New conference commissioner. We're going to talk about this Chiefs roster. We're going to do at least one Chiefs segment with Jesse Newell, our Chiefs insider, right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay. We are going to do a Chiefs segment. We have to do at least one Chiefs segment with Jesse.
Here's the deal. The deal is Jesse has only been on the Chiefs beat for a while, so we got to talk about the other things when they're coming up.
It's not his fault. He's got such a diversity of knowledge and skill sets.
He's either covering Royals games. Yeah. He's been around the Big 12 for years. Yeah.
And this is like, if there is one slow time in the NFL, it's like right before training camp starts. And you know what? And if you're a team, all you're really hoping is that it is really slow, because this is also the time that the police blotter starts getting checked, because this is the time that the guys are out on vacation.
Or certain guys blow their fingers off with fireworks.
Yes.
You know, that's the one thing that...
Or maybe it's the time where someone agrees to a long-term contract, because there's a deadline coming on that.
Yeah. We can get to that in a moment, but
maybe.
I do want to get to this.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see if Jesse has any news on that for us. But real quick, the Kansas City Chiefs did their roster. I'm sorry, ESPN did their roster rankings for all 32 teams, and the Kansas City Chiefs came in number 9. By their standards, the biggest strength, of course, is Patrick Mahomes. Biggest weaknesses, the defensive front. How do we feel about that, Jesse? Do we think like that, I mean, I don't know that you've taken the time to study every single roster in the league, but number nine out of 10, does that seem like a fair ranking for the Chiefs talent going into the season?
Well, yeah, first off, it looks like it's kind of based off of Pro Football Focus rankings. They take the grades of them. And sometimes I push back a little bit on this stuff, because it's sort of like they're trying to make a formula for this. And so it's not going to be perfect, but it is a talking point, and that's why we're on the radio here talking about it. It seems a little low, honestly, obviously, and sometimes you think, okay, well, the quarterback is going to make more of a difference than potentially just one position on here, because it's NFL football. But, you know, I mean, is it completely out of line? I know they mentioned on here that the defensive line is one of the weaknesses, and that's something we've talked about here, too. Like, hey, what are they going to address that more? Are they going to make another trade like Melvin Ingram? Are they going to bring in somebody before camp? Is there more to be done there? Do they just know something about Karloftis or Kando that we don't know, or Frank Clark? I think some of that is pretty fair, and then some of it also probably could be taken as a compliment, right? I mean, part of what we're saying in this offseason is that, and I thought Patrick Mahomes made this point really well when he talked about the Tyreek Hill comments, is saying, look, Andy Reid had really good offenses when I was a baby. Mm-hmm. Andy Reid had good offenses when Alex Smith was the quarterback. Andy Reid will have good offenses even if I'm not here, whoever's not here, but he does seem to fit his pieces pretty well. He figures out what these guys do well and caters to them. And then, like I said, Patrick Mahomes, you would assume that he's going to make the most out of the guys he has. So maybe if you just sort of look at it in a totally unemotional robot way, you say the Chiefs have the ninth best roster. Maybe that's about right, but you add in that to Andy Reid, to the coaching staff, to Patrick Mahomes, and that potentially could still be a Super Bowl because that's sort of the expectations.
Yeah, but the ninth best roster is still a team that's in the playoffs, and who knows what happens in a playoff. So this is not a big slap to the Chiefs, but they did lose one of the most dynamic players in the league, right? When Tyreek Hill goes, he's not on your team anymore. That is a difference, right? And, you know, Frank Clark wasn't very good last year, but if Frank Clark's better this year, all of a sudden that defensive line looks better than it does right now.
Well,
right?
and we talked about this last week. I think this is an important point. And we've talked about the Royals, you know, in this realm, like they haven't been able to make their pitchers better yet. Mm-hmm. Like they haven't been able to improve them. So, you know, I'm like looking at the grades they have here listed on this ESPN article for example, like MVS is 66.1. That's a really low grade. Ronald Jones, 62.3. But, you know, when I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, the Chiefs see something different in MVS than the Packers did.
Yeah, we're on record out there at the minicamp, like, we're not putting him in a box.
Exactly. They can see him running intermediate routes and deep routes. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, maybe his grade with the Chiefs is higher. You know, maybe Ronald Jones is up to get straight up the field and get 8 yards when 8 yards is there or when the offensive line blocks you for five. That's better with the Chiefs, and they get more out of that than potentially what the Bucs did, and that sort of thing. So that's the sort of thing where you can look at this in the offseason and say, oh, okay, ninth, that doesn't sound that great. But some of these additions, they probably have some imagination there to say, we think we can get more out of this player than the previous team, and that's what good organizations
What's the
do.
Difference between ninth and fourth, too? I mean, is it like a whisker, or is it like a great big gap? Probably not much of a gap, honestly.
Probably not.
Well, see, and like when I saw it, I thought a couple things. First thing I thought was, listening to you the last couple times we've had you in talking about how maybe in the short term the Chiefs took a step back by making the Tyreek Hill trade, but in the long term it's going to be a big step forward for the team, and maybe some of that step forward comes in the second half of the season, mm-hmm. depending on how these young guys develop through the course of the year. So I thought, okay, well, if it's true that the Chiefs have taken a short-term step back, still being in the top 10 ain't so bad if you've taken a step back. And I guess my next thought was kind of really just echoing what you said, which is, you tell me that Andy Reid has a top 10 roster and the best quarterback in the league, and I'll tell you he can take that team to the Super Bowl. You give other coaches a top 10 roster, and I go, well, they might be able to, you know, we'll see. You know, and so I think, yeah, like I didn't find that, like when I saw that, I was like, yeah, not bad. Not bad, you know, and maybe I would say, like, if they are a nine, I feel like they're a nine with the arrow pointing up, with the chance to, like, have that roster improve as the season goes on. Because I'm a believer in youth. I really am. Like, I think you want a young roster in the NFL. I don't think, I guess the Rams from last year might throw that back in my face.
They were a dropped interception away from not being in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, that's the margins in football. I mean, that's what it is.
Well, we can say the Chiefs are ninth. I mean, the Chiefs were 7-point favorites against the Bengals. Yeah. You know, so like ninth can beat four.
They
beat
were a
whisker
away from winning that game.
And again, I mean, listen. I'll stand here and pound the table for analytics or advanced stats or PFF, all that stuff you want to do. But I mean, this analysis is going to be limited. I mean, they know it's going to be limited. But you're comparing 32 teams. You got to do something. It's trying something is better than not. So, as you mentioned, Nate, having a younger roster, you're taking grades from last year. Hey, you can assume probably some of those guys are going to improve. And then, like I said, some of these free agent numbers that they picked off, those are very low numbers, but they're probably seeing something in those guys they believe they can get more out of them.
We've only got a couple minutes left. The deadline is July is tomorrow. So we got 15 days, I guess, for Orlando Brown. It was the 4th of July holiday when Patrick Mahomes got his deal done. Different deal. He wasn't a franchise tagged guy and wasn't changing agents and all that. Do you sense any momentum towards this thing getting done before then? He hadn't even signed his tender thing, right? So what do you think is going to, right now, the last day of June, what do you feel is going to happen with Orlando Brown?
Yeah, I think the two sides will come to a deal. I think, like anything else in life, and I'm a journalist, so I will cop to this as well, deadlines make things happen. You know what I mean? And that's just the bottom line. Deadlines make things happen. And so I think it'll be closer to that date getting there. But it does just, I mean, from all the conversation you hear, from whether it's Brett Veach talking about how much they like him, whether it's Patrick Mahomes talking about Orlando Brown and hanging out with him and knows how important it is to try to pursue a Super Bowl, all those sort of stuff, it sounds like it's going to get done. But like I said, sometimes there's just not as much motivation to do things, myself included, until you know that that thing is due coming up. So I will say that that's sort of where it seems like it's going, but a lot of range of possibilities. Nobody would have talked a few months ago about Tyreek Hill not being a Chief, so there's always crazy possibilities out there, but I don't think this is going to be one of them.
Hopefully it'll get worked out, because what they don't want, well, honestly, what the Chiefs have not wanted, and that's maybe one of the reasons that Tyreek Hill is gone, they don't want distractions. They want their people at camp. They want them at mini camp. They want them happy. And that's, you know, that's just the way they've been operating, and I think it's worked better for them that way because they don't want those distractions.
Speaking of camp, are you ready to spend time with Stephen St. John in his old stomping grounds of St. Joe? Like, are you ready for that element of training camp?
Have you been to camp before for a day or two,
I have not been to camp. I've obviously been to St. Joe. Used to cover Emporia State for the old MIAA beat, so I've been
You're
there
familiar.
Before. But, yeah, this will be a different experience. But, no, I'm ready for Stephen to show me around the sites.
We're gonna sit in the tent together, Jesse. It's going to be great. We're going to be in the tent watching practice. Get your binoculars. And get your roster out, and we'll do it.
Me and Todd are rocking the bucket hats.
Yeah, well,
we got it.
I'm a bucket hat guy convert, too. Yeah. I'm a bucket hat convert,
Keeps
too.
Keeps the ears nice and not red.
Yeah, yes. And yeah.
Sunscreen, all of it.
You got to know. Hey, look, as a guy of Scottish and Polish heritage, I was not meant to be out in the sun for too long, so I'm all bucket hat guy. Jesse, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Jesse Newell here. Also, our thanks to Felipe Hernandez and Cam Duke for coming to the studio. Buster Olney as well.
Namdi.
And Namdi bringing it with some irrational Kansas football optimism. I'm all for it, man. And also, don't forget, get your tickets to the Monarchs tonight and help fight Alzheimer's as well. If you're listening, Ted Wiley, I did it again.
Again.
All right. The zone is
zone.
Next. The
Corey Anderson's final day with us. Love Corey Anderson.
Oh, man. Love Corey Anderson. See you guys tomorrow on the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.